guess we're on the Ad Hoc Consulting Selection Subcommittee. RFP for Legislative Representation Services, November 12th, 2019, 6:30 p.m. Before we get started, copy of open meetings law is on the back, on the right-hand side. Forum call.
Bradley.
Here.
Stavinsky.
Here.
Caesar.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Palmer.
Here. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Motion. The second. Any questions? Roll call.
Stavinsky.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Aye. Item number five, proof of publication of meeting notice. I have a copy of that, which will become part of the permanent record. Item number six, review and recommendation on public relations contract with Catalyst Public Affairs. John Lincoln.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. October Board of Directors meeting, a majority of the Board of Directors approved the district to enter into contract negotiations with Catalyst Public Affairs to provide government relations services to the district beginning December 1st, 2019 through June 30th, 2022. For a fixed monthly payment fee of $3,500 from December 1st, 2019 to June 30th, 2020, and a monthly fee of $4,000 a month from July 1st, 2020 through June 30th, 2022, which would be the end of the contract. The attached contract is there for your review. It has been reviewed by District Legal Counsel, and staff would recommend that we approve this contract and enter into the services starting December 1st of 2019.
We can have a motion.
Motion. Approve.
Second staff recommendation.
Second. Okay, staff recommendation. Anyone from the public wish to speak to this item? Reggie?
Thank you, Chairman. I couldn't help but look at this whole agenda tonight, and we'll just start with this. What is it about this that could not have waited till the Thursday meeting? Simple as that, gentlemen. This was 3 minutes of discussion at a Thursday meeting. What about it requires a subcommittee meeting? And you could almost say it's for all of them. Well, you know what we're wasting money on here? Is this could have happened at the general meeting.
The process is the board is divided into subcommittees to address items that are in the purview of that subcommittee. So the discussion and
I appreciate that. Can I explain? This is for the board.
No, this is a subcommittee,
and this is for the board. I get where you're coming from. I acknowledge you're trying to say it goes in subcommittees, but I'm telling you that this is a waste because there's nothing here that could not have been reviewed in the board for everybody to have input. Not only directors, but the public and others.
Any other questions? Anyone have any other questions? Roll call.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Yes.
And
Jefferson.
Aye. I vote no too.
You're not on the subcommittee.
It doesn't matter. This is a full board meeting. Can't you count?
That completes that.
No, seriously. Can you count? Are there six or more directors here, and are we conducting business? Yes or no?
Mr. Goodall, you're out of order.
Are there six or more directors here, and are
matter.
We conducting business?
It doesn't matter.
It certainly
you're
does. This is a full board
order.
Meeting.
Out of bounds.
Oh, no, sir. That's just your opinion. You're reading Robert's rules. Read the state law. State law says six or more board members meeting at one time to conduct board business is most certainly a board meeting.
This is a public meeting. It's recorded. Minutes. And
then I vote. And at any meeting, I agree with you. At any meeting, I can vote against. I have the right to vote.
The meeting.
I have the right to vote.
No, you don't.
And the chairman's over here, isn't? Aren't chair?
Well, he's done it. He's done.
I didn't catch that.
We're between ad hoc meetings and you're wasting our time and energy and you're out of line.
I do agree that this is a waste of time with ad hocs. I agree with you 100%, sir.
Okay, here you go.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
We're on the meeting.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Larry.
Here we go. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska
REV State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations, then the public will be given the opportunity to speak on the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. We will ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. And call the order. Back posting and announcement of meeting procedure. Quorum call.
Conley.
Here.
Lipinski.
Here.
Teaser.
Here.
Weiss. McCormick, sorry.
Here.
And Chairperson.
Here. Review and recommendation on initial screening of proposals for consultant selection interviews.
Adopt the agenda.
Well, I'm telling you. Let's adopt the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All right. Or do we vote on the adoption of the agenda? All right.
Lipinski?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
And Chairperson?
Yes. All right. Proof of publication of meeting notice. Recommendation initial screening of proposals for consultant selection interviews.
Yes, good evening. So we advertised for proposals from consulting firms on October 11th. They were due by November 6th. We received six proposals, Earhart Griffin & Associates, HGM Associates, JEO Consulting Group, SCS Engineers, Tetra Tech, and Terracon. So this is on behalf of the Southern Sarpy Watershed Partnership. The district acts as the administering agent for that partnership, and as such, we handle contracting. The work is to address construction stormwater in the Southern Sarpy area, so outside of the Papillion Creek watershed in Sarpy County. These inspections are required as part of their MS4 permit, which is municipal separate storm sewer system. Each community is responsible for managing their own stormwater, and they have a permit issued by the Nebraska Department of Environment and Energy. And so as part of that, they have to make sure that construction sites are inspected regularly to make sure that they are handling sediment and erosion control from those sites. To date, there has not been a lot of development in this area, so the City of Omaha has been taking care of that for them. However, in the last few months, that's kind of exploded with some of the bigger data centers. There's now 30 active construction projects in this area, which is more than one full-time person. So that is the purpose of going out, trying to find a firm that can handle that, because the City of Omaha will not do that after the first of the year. So with that, I can answer any questions you have about the proposals.
I'd like to make a motion that we interview four firms for this activity. I'll name the firms HGM Associates, JEO Consulting Group, SCS Engineers, and Tech.
Can I see those marks real quick?
Sure. Who's missing here? Is it eight?
We have a motion. There's been a second. And we'll move to the discussion. Anybody from the public wish to speak? Right now, directors. Director Teaser.
You know, I go back and did you have ACM as well? ACM was one of the. Yeah, okay. I go back a long ways, and I did take time to read these things, and I look for quality of material that what we get is representative of what kind of work that I or we expect to be done. But let's look at Tetra Tech. Why don't you look at the get the Tetra Tech out and look at the second paragraph. And I'm going to read part of it. Tetra Tech currently is investing in growing our Omaha office and is standing up an environmental engineering team. The word is starting up. You know, if they can't even get the dam first, their opening letter to us right, how can I expect them to do work? Now, the same thing, let's go look on ACGM on page, Scott Moffitt makes on page, I think it'd be the second page in, with HGM. HGM is pleased to present, not pleased. You know, there again, you know, here we're paying these guys big money, and they came and put a damn proposal together without proofreading it. And we're supposed to be giving them hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I looked at these others. Frankly, I am also one that likes to see Nebraska companies because they are taxpayers in Nebraska. I prefer to give the work to a firm that is a Nebraska company. I see some of these are Kansas, some are California, and the Nebraska companies did a reasonably good job, one or two of them I would certainly support, but when I see this kind of crappy work, excuse me, in a presentation, it upsets me, and that's my basis for if they can't even do this right, how do we know they can do the important stuff right? And so I would object to those two being included.
And Mr. McCormick, Director of Public.
I agree that the in-state would be nice to keep the money and the work in the state with people that are founded here. I've worked with HGM for many years, and I found their work to be excellent, so yeah. I would disagree with that. But okay. They did have a typo in their proposal.
Okay, I guess I'm not real familiar with this whole selection process and why we're doing this. Is this something, you said the city of Omaha had been doing the inspections and so forth previously and they no longer want to do it?
Or? Right. So in the Papillion Creek watershed, through that partnership, Omaha is reimbursed for their staff time for doing
right.
these inspections. And all of the MS4 communities in the Southern Sarpy partnership are also Papio partnerships. So the city had kind of said, well, you know, there's only one or two projects on there. We'll just take care of that for now. Now there's 30. That would require them to add additional staff, which then, you know, requires extra vehicle purchases, technology purchases. So it kind of balloons out, and they don't feel that they can adequately cover this area so far outside of their own jurisdiction.
Definitely an NRD thing that we need to do now. We hadn't been doing it before, but now we need to take over this.
Right. So as the administering agent for the partnership, we are doing this on behalf of the Southern Sarpy Watershed Partnership. All of this will be paid out of that fund, which is contributions from the member communities as well as development fees.
All of it will be? So
yes.
All the expenses involved with this process will be paid by those members, not the NRD and
So we collect all the fees and the contributions from the members, and then we would disperse the payments. We hold a separate fund. It's fund 26, the very last page of the budget.
So this is not a budget item that comes out of our general fund?
We are a member. We contribute, but not all of it.
Right.
Our portion of it. Okay, I understand.
4%.
Where was our percent?
I think it's 33%.
A third of it?
33.
Yeah.
Who gets the other two-thirds in?
So it goes into Papillion, Bellevue, Gretna, and Springfield, and Sarpy County all pay the other two-thirds.
They pay up.
Yeah, it's so it's
20% of
yeah.
The
there's a formula based on population and area.
I was just going to ask if I could. Are you going to make a substitute motion then? Is that how this would work?
If he wants to,
the amended motion.
He amended. If
okay,
he wants to take somebody out.
All right.
I would like to amend the motion to reduce the number from 4 down to 3, and then we can discuss whom Before I open my mouth, though, again, the staff have a recommendation.
So I would say one thing to your point about Tetra Tech and the standing up. They have had an environmental services team in Omaha for a long time, but they are trying to grow that, and that's what they meant by standing up, not starting. So they are not starting from scratch on that. Otherwise, I can't speak to, I don't know if they had other typos. They are a larger firm. They were not founded in Nebraska, so I do understand that. My recommendation after reading all of the proposals would be JEO, SCS, and Tetra Tech in no particular order.
Say that again.
JEO, SCS, and Tetra Tech.
That's the top three that the staff recommends.
I can certainly, if I may continue with the
good, yes.
Four. I thought JEO's presentation here, or the superior, no mistakes, great references. I was very, very impressed with JEO. We've used them a lot over the years. It is a Nebraska firm out of Wahoo. I have no ties to them. They're not a contributor or whatever. I just thought that their presentation, their proposal was heads and shoulders above the others I read. At that point, I'll shut up.
Okay, that's okay, Director Keiser. This is an important decision. I had a question, though, about this might be, is there more of a legal commerce clause in the Constitution of the United States that one state cannot prevent any other state from coming into their state correctly? So I guess if there is anybody from out of state putting a bid in, you know, we might think about it, you know, consider them, but not that we're denying them just because they're from another state. If we pick select somebody, it's because it's the superior firm. And if it happens to be from Nebraska, all the better. On that line of what Director Teaser was talking about, I know I've said a few things public and lecture and so forth about, for example, there was a type of pipeline that they were running water, I think, from the Platte River into another river. That river could run into Kansas, and it would appease Kansas. And at the same time, there was a pipeline coming through Nebraska, I think it's the Keystone XL, and they were trying to get all the unions or many steam fitters on board say they were in favor of the pipeline, but at the same time, for the pipeline work in Nebraska, they're using a firm from Kansas. So I didn't want, you know, unions in Nebraska to get hoodwinked on anything like that. Power transmission or power line in northwestern Nebraska, NPPB power line, and then they hire a firm from South Dakota to do the work in Nebraska because we can't do it. And did the bidding and so forth. But for this process, I do want to make it known that it is about as fair as we can be. Rightly that proposed, but we will whittle it down to three or four.
Rich, do you have three that you want to add your
motion? I went with my motion was three.
But which ones?
CEO, HCM, and what was the third? Your third?
SCS.
Yeah, she didn't mention HCM.
Staff recommendation was Terracon, Tetra Tech.
Terracon, yeah.
No.
Tetra
Tech, SCS,
and JEO. That was our
recommendation.
Okay. All right, well, the first motion on the floor was for HGM. Can amend it so you
he got a second.
Amended it.
He got a second.
Okay,
he got a second.
Got a second. So,
yeah, but I haven't got a second. So, I'm waiting.
I'll second Director Teaser's recommendation to accept staff recommendation for three firms.
Okay.
I'm confused. I don't, did you have a staff recommendation?
Or did you have HD?
Or did you add HD?
Okay, the staff.
I thought you deferred to Lori.
You recommended four.
Three. No, three. She recommended three.
Three.
I recommended three.
JEO, SCS, and Tetra Tech. Those were Lori's. But you did you want HGM in one of those spots, or?
Or you just go with staff recommendation?
As long as I got JEO and Tetra Tech, I'm happy.
So, you, so I guess he's saying
that. No, you're right there.
So Director Teaser's second motion, you pull that motion, Director Teaser, and then we'll go with the...
No. Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
He had an amendment to the motion to select three, and now it's been identified which three.
Okay.
So there is only one amendment to consider, and the three being JEO, SES, and Tetra Tech.
Right. All right.
Right. Now, everyone clear on that? So that's a, so has it been seconded?
Yeah, it was seconded.
Yeah, seconded.
So that's the motion. That's
okay. Roll call.
Mr. Chairman, point of order. I should have a little bit of public comment, if any, on the amendment.
Thanks for the correction. Any public wish to speak? Directors.
Lori.
Director Gunwald.
Thank you, sir. Lori. Why these three versus the other three? Can you just, very short, what's...
Well, these three firms understand the MS4 program that I spoke about. This is a national program through EPA. It's delegated to the state. Then the state then delegates it to the communities. These three firms have the best understanding of that program, I felt.
They're superior, significantly superior than the other three?
I wouldn't use significant, no.
They're a little better.
Yeah, they have that understanding, whereas the other firms don't do that type of work. I mean, it's really the proposals of those three firms really captured what we're looking for in the consultant, and the other three kind of missed the mark a little bit.
But not very far.
I would say HGM did not, you know, they would be fine. The other two, Terracon and EGA, well, you know, they, especially EGA, they've done work for us in the past and they've done great. It's just their understanding of this particular program that is lacking.
Yes, Director.
Terracon, correct me if I'm wrong, but the fire came out of Terracon, didn't it?
Tetra Tech.
And the majority of the, how do I say this tactfully, like what I consider the cream of the crop is moved on to a different company. However, they're not one of those that we're considering.
Fiverr declined to respond since they're working on the Southern Sarpy Watershed Management Plan. They felt that might be a conflict. You know, Tetra Tech, I know Becky Newman, who the client manager. I know her very well. I've known her for a long time. And, you know, so she's been there for a while. She did a completely different set of work than what the group that went to FIRA did. You know, they do the levees and the dams and that kind of design work, and that's great. But the remaining part of Tetra Tech does more environmental compliance work.
Well, I found one of the local firms I thought we've been dealing with for 12 years or so on a project, and we're still not completed, but I thought they were more geared to recreational development, and I thought this was a little bit too big for them, and I hope you know who I'm referring to. Earhart Griffin.
Oh, okay.
And I just felt that this was not in their realm of.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing to reflect poorly on them, the firms.
You know.
It's just their staff having understanding of this particular program.
All right.
Yes, Director Baker.
Director Teaser referenced some typos in those submitted resumes that they, are we going to be able to get those for the ones we recommend the full board to read these?
They yeah, they're available.
Okay. Yeah,
I'd like to get those. Whoever we recommend you guys in the subcommittee, but
we'll get those too.
Okay, thanks. Great.
We vote on the amended.
I have just a comment that it seems to me that the Tetra Tech was one that you had this pleasure with. You seem to read the proximity is downtown in their offices. These Terracon and HGM have been in town a long time. I don't know how they perform in this scope of work. I'm curious as to what your evaluation.
So that would have been the biggest part is that, again, I'm not saying that the firm doesn't do great work. And I know that we have worked with HGM quite a bit. It's just the environmental compliance and going through the EPA and the state rules. Those are the two things that we're really looking for is a good understanding of those programs. And that's just not, that was not reflected in the proposals.
So, please, could you clarify the original motion and then the amendment?
The original motion had to do with four. And
those four?
For HGM.
JEO.
SCS. And Tetra Tech.
That was the original.
Did you say Tetra Tech was the fourth one?
Yes.
Because that's not what I put, so I'm glad you're clarifying that. All right.
That was
you.
The original motion.
All right. Clear as mud. I got it.
But we vote first on the amended motion.
Amended
motion is, Lori, again, the three firms, so everyone knows.
JEO, SCS, and Tetra Tech.
Right. Ad hoc committee members have that. Right. Roll call.
McCormick?
No.
Conley? Pinsky?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
And chairperson?
Yes.
3 yea, 2 nay.
Okay. Vote on the motion as amended. Thank you.
Conley?
I guess aye.
Sorry?
Aye.
Sapinski?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
And chairperson?
Yes.
I can write as that. I'm sorry.
That finishes the ad hoc committee. I want to remind folks that on December 5th, 2019, the ad hoc subcommittee meeting to interview selected firms.
Thank you very much, Director Brown. I'd like to call to order the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee meeting, November 12th, 2019. We've had a reading of the Open Meetings Act, which applies also to this subcommittee. Quorum call.
Fowler?
Here.
Jeff?
Yes, I'm here.
Here.
Teaser?
Here.
Chairperson?
Aye. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Motion? Just need a second.
Second.
Roll call.
Who has the second?
I do. Director Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff. Roll call. Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Sapinski?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Aye. Item number five, proof of publication of meeting notice. We have that and become part of the permanent record. Item number six, review and recommendation of groundwater monitoring joint funding agreement with USGS Paul Wood.
Good evening, everyone. This project, the monitoring that we have going on, which is basically kind of wells out there in between the Platte and the Elkhorn River that monitor the elevation of the groundwater as it moves up and down out there, stems from a project we did with USGS where they have completed the initial part of that study, and a report was just basically a couple months ago, was finalized and is put out on their website, so you can go take a look and review that. As part of that report, we kind of went through a period where we didn't quite see all the data information we were looking to see, so they recommended that we continue monitoring. Go down to the map, if you would, Bill. This shows where those sites are located. So we do take other annual readings of the groundwater elevation. Every spring we do, and then most of the time we do in the fall as well. But the location here, what am I doing? Location here of the six wells is shown here, one in Lower Platte North, and then as they go across over to Waterloo. Help us give some idea of how the groundwater elevations change in that area. And by the fact that they're continuously recording, they're not a one-time snapshot view of what's going on. So it's nice to see how that's happening. It's actually something, a trend more and more NRDs are doing, this continuous monitoring of the groundwater levels, at least in some of their areas, so that you can see how that changes over time and from year to year. It's not just the one-time thing. We would go to the website real quickly. I'll show you some of the results we continue to get, and this is available all the time. So this is one of the wells in the middle there in between the two rivers. It's actually a spot where MUD had a monitoring well, but they didn't have a continuously recording system in it, so we went ahead and put one of those in this. USGS operates these, so they take care of all the equipment problems. Anything we would have paid for telemetry, like, because they do it by satellite, but if we were to do it on our own, we would be paying cellular service every year to do this type of stuff. So that's all included in the price and the cost that we're looking at here. One of the really interesting things, even though we haven't seen, you know, more of the drought periods that the study was intended to look at, it's really interesting to see what we have had during the high flow periods during the summer months in 2017. And then this year's flood, pretty amazing, like a 5-foot jump that comes within a foot and a half of the ground surface. So water just swelled and filled up that entire valley, not only with flood water above the ground, but with groundwater below the ground. So it's interesting to kind of map that and see how that works. So I guess what I'm really getting at, too, is that, you know, at some point we're going to want to keep a long-term record of these groundwater stages and elevations. I think we picked this particular area because it is mostly our main area of interest in the district, where someday we're going to have to potentially model or look at the water's going here, the water's going there, what's happening to the water quantity-wise and potentially quality-wise. So, you know, we're not expanding this continuous monitoring to the entire district, but I think this is a special area where we want to keep moving towards that long-term record. So if you would go back to the memo there. So the memo outlines right now, it's similar to our flood warning agreement, in which case we're, move up to the motion if you would, Bill. We're putting together this funding agreement every year with USGS. At this current time, USGS is keeping all the costs the same and the prices the same. So this is what we did last year. We paid about $13,000. We'll keep an eye on that as we go ahead. I did look, we have had some other projects where we've actually looked at what does it cost to buy the equipment. What if NRD staff was to switch this so USGS wasn't doing it? I think overall, of course, you'll end up paying quite a bit up front in buying the equipment and getting all that, you know, maybe on the order of $15,000, but that's probably a one-time cost for equipment that should last, I'm not saying it'll completely last, but it should last 10 years. You know, we certainly got our money's worth this year. They replaced about it, or four out of the six gauges because of the flooding. Everything was completely damaged. So you do have kind of an insurance policy also when you're working with USGS that, hey, we're paying you this rate. You keep it running and keep it going. But But certainly, I think if you looked at that over time, I think this is a reasonable cost because we would be paying like cellular fees. Not only in each case, you'd have to have a well with the equipment reading the groundwater level. You'd also have to have some sort of transmitter or cellular device that's transmitting it so you can see what's going on. So things do add up, I guess, is what I'm trying to say on that point. But okay, that's about all I've got. I did want to just provide a little bit more background as to why we're looking at this data and why we think it's important. Yep.
We could have a recommendation on this item.
I move and go to staff.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Director Teaser?
Yeah, I really don't have a problem with the dollar amount, but I do have a concern. We 2019, obviously, we were underwater. We high water table, and already USGS National Weather is forecasting much higher flows than normal. This whole thing is really geared to looking at drought situations between and the travel of water between, I'm going to say, Platte River Landing to the Elkhorn River at Waterloo, for example, generally in that area. And I guess from my perspective, if we're already being kind of told we're going to have high water table, you know, would it be wise to sit on this for a year and let 1 year pass and let's get back down to a normal situation where we have normal flows? Because I have water ponded in my property where I haven't ever had water ponded and it's still there. I mean,
I'm not under the impression that we're going to see those conditions in the near future right now. But the only thing I would say to that is I think if we ever do come back and we're putting together when we do a model, we want to know that it matches the conditions we saw in the real world. And part of that would be that it would actually run through every year's cycle. How much precip did we get? How much flows was in the river? And it should follow that pattern of what's going on. If we skip a year and we don't have that pattern, we might miss calibrating that model to tell us, you know, we're trying to get it to tell us what we think is a real-world answer. But we certainly could do that, pick it back up again, and we would probably be able to match more drier conditions at some point in time. But
I'm right. We're looking for drought conditions, not high water conditions. And, you know, what we're looking at is high water.
That's
or
true.
Flood water in some instances.
Yeah. I think if we could select even a few places and just keep a long-term record, I guess that's kind of the other thought process that we're going through. We may not need all six, and we may not have to do all that all the time. But right now we're kind of in a transition zone is what I feel from when we actually did the study to when we might come back to it and look at the data again. I would still recommend keeping it, but I can see us making some decision in the future about let's cut it down, let's not do that.
Director Brady?
Yes. Monitoring potentially quality.
In terms of that, I was focusing on how the quality and the movement of groundwater would be important to know in terms of if you were looking at quality issues. So we're not directly, none of these monitoring sites are measuring the groundwater quality at this time, except for where USGS goes out and actually samples once a year. But they, you know, if it ever came a time where we were modeling a plume or some issue going on with contamination, this quantity data would be good to know because then you would know what the answer is telling you about where it's taking the pollutants and why.
One of the arguments you were making, just confirm me here, is you're trying to make the statement that value to be had in maintaining consistency.
Yeah,
even
correct.
In years where it may not have. How far back do these go right now?
That was the beginning of when we put those in, was 2016.
The other ones, because I remember we were talking before about having some other ones that are all that tied in with these as well?
It's not directly tied in. As far as measuring groundwater levels, we're just doing it on those six right now with USGS. And the one at Waterloo was a little bit older. Brian Hinkle and us started that in about 2014, but just that one. So we've got one that's from 2014, and the other five going over towards the Platte are from 2016.
So you looked at these for basically 5 years.
The really interesting part is they, you know, you can follow how they follow the levels in the river, and they're very connected, of course, is what, you know, kind of that data helps provide us that. It also gives us, like specifically like the one at Waterloo, if you see a difference in, let's say this is the groundwater level right next to the river, and this is the river level, maybe a tenth or two different, you're constantly seeing, okay, most of the time the Elkhorn River is gaining water from the groundwater. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you can map when it doesn't. But and the same thing is kind of going on at the Platte. We're kind of seeing this transition where the Platte's gaining some water. We've actually seen it a little bit where it's gaining water on the west side of the river, but it's losing it towards the east. So even though there's a river right in the middle, this groundwater gradient's kind of still making its way towards the Elkhorn River.
Question, because this sounds like a
Yeah, it was
a lot of decisions on six.
Well, it was just meant at this time to be like a transect across the two rivers.
Probably is just this little area.
No, if you look at the report, some of the stuff we tried to do in the report was to get we did two larger scale water level surveys by hand. And so we can kind of match how those fit the data on the curve. This is what we saw when those water level surveys were done. As things go up and down, we can kind of figure out how is that changing groundwater levels throughout the valley.
So you established a baseline. But it goes back to, at what point do we have enough quality data to be able to make quality decisions? It's as simple as that. How many would we need to be... statistically significant here? How many would really make this work?
I can ask USGS about more information towards that, what would be statistically significant.
One last question, Paul. The Elkhorn River obviously was running higher all year since before I can even remember. I mean, you know, we've had tremendous flows. Now, how is that going to impact the ultimate graph? I mean, we've had exceedingly high flows coming on the Elkhorn. That groundwater is bleeding out. Is that going to give us a true picture at Waterloo and else in that area of the migration of the water from the Platte toward the Elkhorn when the Elkhorn is actually higher than the Platte? I mean, you know, in
terms of volume, yeah, I think one thing it did show, like I was mentioning through that data, is it usually was consistent that the groundwater elevation was higher, even as high as the Elkhorn River got. So what's probably happening there is it slowed down the movement of water from the groundwater into the river, but it never stopped. So the river may come up, there's still some sort of, and the groundwater reacts to that, it comes up too, and it's still kind of dumping some into the Elkhorn. I think the idea of the drought scenario to figure out, you know, when the Elkhorn River does go down, we want to see, okay, how much more water is the groundwater putting into the river when it's lower? Because all we've seen right now, like you said, has been pretty much high stages and what's going on. But at least it gives us some consistent results. If it's always contributing at those high stages, it's going to continue to contribute water when it goes lower. The question would be really how much.
Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Sapinski?
Yes.
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 Chairperson?
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Item number seven, review and recommendation on Papio watershed structures D-17 and D-18 front berm stabilization project bids. Martin Cleveland.
Good evening. District, as probably some of you know, maintains about 100 dams, and these are two of the dams that have been built over the years. This first one is located near Ida at 144th Street, actually 146th Avenue in Ida. But it's called the Waterford area, and it was built to basically grade control and also to water quality, keep sediment out of Sandbury Lake. And so it's actually built by the NRCS, totally funded as far as construction cost goes, and design, and the district provided the right-of-way for this project. Go to the next map, Bill, if you could. The other site, this is called D-18. It's near 144th and 4th Street, and it's in the Weston Hills area. And it's, again, same kind of a program built in the 90s by the NRCS. And both have did a good job for all these years of helping Stanbury, you know, water quality and also grade control. What's happened now in the last maybe a few years, we've discovered a lot of wave erosion occurring on the front slopes of these dams. And so what's happened is we're losing the protective berm, which is on the front slope of the dam. And over time, it becomes a dam safety issue, and we're at a point now where we can fix it before it becomes a dam safety issue. So we're trying to fix it before that happens. Basically placing a thin layer of rock riprap on the front slope of that dam, and we've did it a lot of other locations throughout the district throughout the years. Unfortunately, it wasn't included in the original design of the dam by the NRCS, and so it was just soil, basically soil berm, and that does, unfortunately, doesn't work well with wave erosion over time. So we asked for bids on this and received two bids. Go back to the bid summary sheet, if you could, Bill. And received bids from Thompson Construction Company of Fremont and then Valley Corporation of Valley. And as you can see here, the bids range from $207,000 to $128,315. By Thompson, and then engineer's estimate was $155,450. Thompson has worked for the district in the past, rehabbing some dams in the Sarpy County area, and also has did work as far as installing riprap on dams in, I believe, in Washington County or in Bird County, one of the two in the past, probably Bird County. So we've had a lot of experience with actually both companies, and both are very competent companies. Go back to the memo, Bill. So what we have tonight is two bids, the range that you see here, and we recommend you go with the low bid of the two from Thompson Construction Company for $128,315. And above you can see the amount of lengths that we're protecting, 950 feet of length on D-17 and then 750 feet of length on D-18. And once we do this, the front slope of that dam will be protected for many, many years. The rock's made of limestone, and it does degrade a little bit over your time, but it's it'd be there for 20 years at least, probably protecting this dam. So again, we're getting ahead of this being a problem structure for us before it gets to severity. So it's would recommend you go with the bid as proposed in the motion on the board. So I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about this.
We can have a motion.
I'll second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
First. Mark, have the dams filled in at all after all these years and all the development around there?
The upper part of the pool is certainly pretty shallow. And I think at the actual riser where the water goes into the dam, I think most cases it's at least 8 feet deep. We've actually did some measurements here because the Game Parks was looking at the fishery due to some residents' questions about that. And it's marginal as far as the fishery. We know there's fish in it, but it's eight, maybe 10 at the most. So it's about 8 feet, roughly. So they have certainly filled in some over time. I think both are getting more and more urbanized around them. So hopefully the sediment's going to be dropping off pretty soon. I mean, as you look in that area of Omaha, there's a lot of houses already there. So hopefully it's getting more to that point. But, of course, the key is it's kept sediment out of Standing Bear Lake, which is, you know, useful as the bigger lake. So it's kind of like we sacrifice the small sites for the big site, kind of like Zrinski. It's happened in the past. But in the meantime, all these residents that live in those areas, I'm sure, enjoy both the lakes. They're both the amenity of the site, so.
Thanks.
Richard, yep.
Are we, the NRD, solely responsible for the maintenance?
We are, yeah. It's there's a cooperation agreement with the NRCS that says basically, we'll build a dam for you, but you have to maintain it forever. And so until we, at some point,
sorry, okay,
that's a long time. Until we transfer to someone else, and sometimes we get an opportunity to do that, but rarely does that happen. But ever so often, there'll be some situation where, you know, there wants to be some developer wants to change the site a lot, and we'll say, okay, we'll just give the dam to you. You can take care of it. But NRCS requires that grade control to be maintained forever. So that's part of the program of Public Law 56 is you have grade control, and you heal these gullies that have occurred over the years in the Papio watershed. It's healed those gullies, and they have paid a lot of money, of course, to do that through the design and construction. They want someone to guarantee that they're going to maintain that in the future. So if you took the dam out, you guys still have to put the grade control back in through a box culvert or something like that to maintain the elevation of the grade. And so both these sites, you know, do have some grade control, but the big thing was probably water quality for Standing Bear, really, is why they were built. And the NRCS saw the benefits and approved them at the time, so.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Sosinski?
Yes.
Beezer?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Aye. Thanks a lot. Item number 8, review and recommendation on bid opening for Elkhorn River Improvement Project 2019 repairs. Eric, please.
Good evening, everyone. We introduced this last month, and this is a March 2019 flood repair project. The Elkhorn River has a specific section where we assess annually and collect money from the benefited parcels on both sides of the river, and so that builds the Elkhorn River IPA fund. And the purpose of that fund is to do bank stabilization projects to avoid damage to infrastructure and private property in the area of the assessment. And so we put out to bid rock riprap stabilization along a couple different areas of the bank. And Bill, do you have that map? Let's see which one we got. One more to the left. There you go. So this in this section of the Elkhorn River, there are five locations where through assessment of staff with FIRA, and then through a follow-up FEMA site inspection, we identified locations on the east side of the river, 1, 2, 3, 4, and one location on the west side of the river, which need rock riprap to be placed essentially at the top of the bank in order to activate and slide in and provide stabilization generally on the outer banks, the outer curve of the river, to avoid the river continuing to meander out, essentially. You see erosion on the outer bank, and you see sediment accumulating on the inner bank. And so in all these locations, again, you can see that we've got outer bank erosion, and we were bidding for rock stabilization to prevent additional outer bank erosion. One site is a little bit different. The west site, the west side of the river in this location, there were three jetties which were previously constructed by the Elkhorn River IPA fund. It's a different style of stabilization actually in the water. And so the four locations on the east are rock at the top top of the bank, and the one location on the west is reconstruction of the jetty in the water. There's a slight modification on this one. You can see here that there is rock along the river, which is generally still in place, but the river came over the bank and basically shortcutted directly south through this area during the flood. And so there was a washout behind the rock in this location. So we will also be reconstructing, basically filling in a large hole. A lot of sand and material got deposited in this field. It needs to be placed back into this hole to fill in behind the rock and add some additional rock at the top of the bank for stabilization there. So FIRA did the design work on this project, and we put this out for bid. And Bill, if you can go back to the memo, page 2, please. And we received, this is the letter of recommendation. Yeah, one more page, please. I'm sorry. There you go. This is the bid tab showing the engineer's estimate on the left, and then we received four bids. three of the bids are relatively close in price, and then the low bid was Niewiner Construction. And from the engineer's estimate, we generally assume around $60 per ton of rock placed for stabilization, but due to the amount of stabilization work that is being done by the district and largely by the Corps of Engineers in this area, the quarries are basically sold out of rock until April 1st. Placement of this rock in this section was indicated to be winter work, so placing it December, January, February. So none of the rock from the regular quarries like Weeping Water in the area was available. So the estimate for the rock that we had originally at $60 was adjusted during the engineer's estimate and has been adjusted one additional time here based on the responses that we saw. And so you can see that the Class B riprap is a very significant majority of the entire cost of the project, with bids that came back at 88, 90, 93, and 93. So the engineer's estimate was updated to reflect with that price of rock that we saw from four bids and from a letter we received from the Corps indicating they're seeing prices between $80 and $100 per ton. The estimate was $874,000. So we had three contractors that were quite a bit over that for various reasons on mobilization, additional costs on tree clearing. We're not exactly clear why. Mostly we interpret that as they already have work this winter. They were bidding high, hoping to get one. And Niewiner indicated that they do not have any work already booked this winter, so they bid low, which is why they are reflected at about 15% lower than the other three bids. So from the letter that we have from FIRA, Bill, that would be the previous page, we have worked with Niewiner Construction multiple times in the past. We talked with Jim Niewiner at the conclusion of the bid. He verified that he's confident in the numbers that he provided, the rock estimate. All of the contractors were getting rock from South Dakota, so the price is higher because of transport costs. But we do have confidence that Niewiner Construction can complete this project in the winter at the bid that they provided, and so FIRA recommends that we award the contract to Niewiner Construction. And that is the recommendation that we have this evening, is to award the Elkhorn IPA stabilization according to the bid from Niewiner and give them notice of award so they can begin to secure the rock and move forward with the timeline for the construction.
Just a reminder, this is eligible for 75% FEMA reimbursement. Correct. However, you don't know when you're going to get that reimbursement. It could be 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. So the district will have to front that money. The IPA, I believe, has
30,000, I think, about now.
Yeah, and so that'll cover the 25%, but we're on the hook until we get reimbursed by FEMA. So we'll have an outlay for it until we get that money back.
Yeah, yes, this is a higher amount of project construction than we had included in the budget originally. So we are working on how we outline where specifically the money comes from in the budget to meet the obligation now, and then where it will be reflected as being reimbursed later. The cost, the local share, the 25% local share, is expected to come from the IPA fund. That would eat up a very significant portion of the IPA fund, but then the 75% is expected to come from FEMA, and we are going through some balancing of how we plan that based on what was included in the budget very early on relative to the work that we needed, the scope of the work, which was more detailed later. So there is some accounting balancing that Amanda and Carrie and I will do to make sure we have this appropriately reflected in the budget.
Thanks, Eric. We can have a motion on this item.
Motion for staff recommendation.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Director Teaser?
Could I ask a question? Dave Hastings, who lives on Ringwood, has been contacting the district, or contacting me consistently about Uncle Scott's, who's on the East Bank, directing that water to that site for IPA site 13 repair.
Yeah, this one.
And and has anything, I know the staff has gone out there several times, has anything happened with Uncle Scott to tell him to quit putting rock and filling in that side of the river and forcing? And I would concur that Mr. Hastings is correct, that Uncle Scott's is directing that water over, diverting the water to the West Bank.
Yeah, Bill, can you zoom in there a little bit? We won't be able to see it exactly, but it'll give you kind of a better idea. The Slide down, right, and then down a little bit. Okay, so, here you go. This location right here, this is the property line. Property lines in this area are not following the river, and so the concern from the property owner on the west is actually that he does own a portion of the land on the east side of the river, but that this property owner is actually carrying out recreation activities, kind of a beach and a tubing type of facility, on property that he does not own. So it sounds as though Mr. Hastings does not have a problem with his neighbor using the land that he that Mr. Hastings owns, but he is concerned that if there was any kind of placement of material in the river which might trigger a regulatory action from the Corps of Engineers, Mr. Hastings does not want to be found responsible for that.
Well, there has been material put in. I mean, I've seen it myself. You know.
Yeah, and that would be a question for the Corps of Engineers, and we've expressed that to him. Whoever is responsible for placing the materials would be the one who would be found responsible by the Corps in that instance. And so if Mr. Hastings has a question, I believe he and his neighbor, he should talk to his neighbor, and then if he is concerned, he could contact the Corps of Engineers. We have visited the site. We do not do regulatory enforcement on placement of material in the river. And so we have been there, and we have seen the activities that are going on. But in general, that would be a question for the Corps of Engineers.
But would you concur with my...
It seems as though there are activities on the east side of the river, and there's the nature of those activities should be reviewed by the Corps of Engineers.
Rich, we can help with that contact if he needs it.
Sorry?
We can help with that contact if
Thank
he
you.
Needs it.
And we have,
did. We actually looked at the site 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And then the year following, and we talked to Mr.
Watson is on
yeah.
the east side. He is.
Okay, Scott.
Watson.
Yeah, Hastings is the owner.
And it, we did go back a year later, and it appeared that he hadn't. He had ceased.
So. Specific cause of erosion on Mr. Hastings' side of the river on the west is most likely that that is a very sharp curve in the river, and that's why jetties were used as stabilization. So we are going to reconstruct the downstream jetty, which is providing the last portion of the stabilization because it was completely washed out during the storm. So it doesn't seem as though the bank is moving significantly other than the loss of that one jetty, which will be reconstructed through this project.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Teaser?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Sapinski?
Yes.
And Jefferson? Aye. Thanks a lot, Eric. I think you're up for the next one. Item number 9, recommendation on Lee Bridge debris cleanup contract.
Yep, this is another project which was damaged from the March of 2019 flood. And Bill, if you have the other map that you can pull up now. So this, again, the Lee Bridge is the pedestrian bridge between Sarpy County on the right, east, and Cass County on the west. There was a significant amount of debris which accumulated on the bridge during the storm, and we put together a scope of work to remove the debris from the upstream side of the bridge and put that out for bid, and we received one bid back. And so, if you can go back, this was following on the amendment to the existing interlocal agreement between the Papio Missouri River NRD, the Lower Platte South NRD, and the Game and Parks Commission, agreeing that Papio would carry out a bid for removal of debris on the bridge, seek FEMA reimbursement for 75%, and then Game and Parks would pay the local portion. The estimated cost based on previous work that the Game and Parks has contracted in this area was around $300,000. The scope is extremely difficult to estimate because of the water levels, and counting debris on a bridge is a tricky issue. So the estimated cost when we did original site visits in April and again in June was around $300,000. That's kind of what we thought we would see as a bid back. This work, again, has been done in 2009, 11, and 16 by Game and Parks as part of their normal operations and maintenance. But since it was an emergency flood response, that's how we ended up with the interlocal to specify that the NRD would carry this out. $300,000 was kind of what we expected. We received only one bid, and it was in the amount of $932,625. That is significantly higher. Bill, if you can flip to the next page in this item. From the one bid that we received, if you scroll down several pages, I think it's page 6 probably, actually. Yeah, this is the one bid. There you go. Oh, I'm sorry. Page 5. And so we had a unit price here of $373 per ton of debris removed. We have asked Game and Parks, previous to putting this out for bid, we had asked Game and Parks for documentation of previous times when they had contracted this, and what they provided back varied widely from one bid, which somehow listed $16 per ton, up to a previous bid, which listed $225 per ton. But in all of the bids, it was somewhere in, for what we believe were the awarded contracts, it was somewhere in the $50, $60, $80 per ton range. So this is pretty significantly outside of what this work has been contracted for in the past. We talked with the contractor. Previously, the debris had been carried off-site and burned and buried in a field just west of South Bend. This contractor suggested that they were going to tub grind the material, which I guess could have impacted the bid overall, the overall price. But we did talk with both Midwest Infrastructure and Niewaunder Construction, who attended the pre-bid meeting but did not submit a bid. Both indicated that the timeline of 2 weeks to submit the bid was short. I guess that's possible. It is a one-item bid, which they have both completed in the past. And they both did indicate that the time to complete the work, which was specified for November, December, and done by the end of January, was relatively short. So we had planned to do this work in the winter when the Platte River is low. That means it's easier to remove the debris. It doesn't seem like that will be able to be completely carried out. So we would like to rebid this this project, adjusting the timeline for the completion of the work to allow both winter completion of whatever portion is possible, particularly the area in the center and deep part of the channel where a large portion of the debris might cause impacts during a potential ice situation in January or February, and then allow for additional time over the summer when the Platte River is low again, when the contractor could return to the site and complete the remainder of the work. We think that that should allow, one, more bids to come in, and two, more flexibility in the bids. We're a little unclear. We will rediscuss with contractors again, but in talking with Game and Parks, they did not want to award this contract because they are responsible for the local portion, and we would agree that this is significantly higher than we would have thought for this scope of work. So rebidding is the recommendation for the one response that we received back on this project.
Thank you. You have a motion.
I'll move staff recommendation.
Yeah, reject the bid.
Reject the bid.
And to rebid.
And rebid, yeah.
Make the motion, please.
I made the motion, yes.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
What happens if March comes along or February and we have a doubling of the amount of wood hung up on the bridge?
Which
is very possible.
I think that is something we would have to negotiate with the contractor. We did ask for a unit price, and that allows flexibility in the total units, total tons removed. If we were outside of that, I think we would probably consider a change order. I think that would be something we'd have to address at the time. You're right that more debris could accumulate in the winter. I guess projecting how much we think will come down is very challenging. If we have a similar event as last year,
you look between Blondo Street and Highway 92 and see what's there. It's going to be going down that way. I go, holy.
Right. And so, you know, I guess that would be a discussion with Game and Parks, who would fund the local portion of this, and Lower Platte South, about how do we want to try and handle additional debris in the future. If it is not caused by an emergency flood designation, that would probably fall under normal operations and maintenance, which is, per the original interlocal, the responsibility of Game and Parks. So we might agree to extend the contract that we have with the additional portion being covered by Game and Parks, if that's how they wanted to handle that, or additional debris might need to be designated as this was not covered by what FEMA would designate as a reimbursable activity, and so it will not be contracted as part of this activity. I think we'll have to discuss that with FEMA, discuss that with Game and Parks, and see what happens in the future.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson?
I'm curious how you came up with the 2,500 estimated tons anyway, but it is unit price, and I think that would cover your concerns. On the other hand, a lot of it blows downstream between now and actual contract performance. Works in our favor. How do you measure the tonnage?
We wanted to talk with the contractor about that. If they have trucks that can weigh the tons, there's a conversion factor for yards of size of truck, 0.6 tons per cubic yard. It's in, if you go to the additional item bill that is the bid work. Yeah, so this is the description of the work on site, and in the bottom of this page, I believe. There you go. 0.6 tons per cubic yard. And so knowing the size of the truck, converting with this factor that was used by Game and Parks on a previous project, you can basically estimate the amount of debris. So there would be some on-site inspection, essentially, to verify this is a full load. Multiply the 10 cubic yard truck by 0.06
to
get
a warm jacket.
What's that?
Have you got a warm jacket?
We'll talk with our partners about who would do the on-site to verify that.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions?
Marlon?
One of the items that certainly the issue that you may accumulate more, I'm really concerned with ice coming through this and getting jammed on this bridge. And when we saw this bid, John and I visited, pretty concerned. We did talk with Game and Parks, because actually our agreement says Game and Parks will pay the non-FEMA share. So we're getting FEMA funding here again as well. And Parks, since they've been the one that's cleaned, have agreed through our interlocal agreement. So they're a big partner here in this. And so we consulted with them in this as well, and they're recommending that we save $1,000 or $250,000. John and I decided it might be good to go get some boots on the ground and look at it. If you got a couple of minutes, I might show you the pictures that we took last Friday, which was the second coldest day we've had early in the morning. The bridge is blocked off now. So access is definitely, this is on the cast side, so the other side of the river, west side. You can't get on the bridge unless IR, we climb around the gate. But
which we do not recommend.
For trespassing.
I'll just sit here. So this is what it looks like on the upstream side of the bridge over on the Cass County side. And you can see certainly, is it this?
Red one in the middle.
Yep.
It's not going to work.
Okay, and so that was that end. This is from the middle of the bridge looking toward the Cass County. And you can see there is quite a bit of open area. There are, in the middle of the bridge, we put in some longer spans, and five of these did have good open area. Now if you go to the next picture, this is looking back at the cast side, the railing's all in place. The railing, by the way, has to come down to take the debris off so you can get a backhoe over the edge. And it was designed that way so you could take off two panels at one time and disassemble this. And that's what Game and Parks has had their contractors do every time they've taken debris off. Go ahead. This is looking the other direction toward our side now, looking more east. And you can't see it real well, but there's looks like a tree right back in here, but we'll get a little closer. Go to the next picture. Looking under the bridge again, at the middle here, there is some open champ, and pretty good. Go ahead. And then we run into things like this, where actually the debris has come up, lifted that railing and this is where, really on our side here, where the railing's down, it pushed it up, and you've got a lot of debris. You've got some short spans in here, and we've got three or four that are just totally jammed full. Go ahead. Oh, that's that same picture looking. Center of the bridge is right here where there's a. So this is just on fence repair starts here. So we're asking the contractor, he's got to take this fence and salvage it as much as he can. Go ahead. And then you have this section here that's just really piled in. Like I say, it is three or four. I was out there trying to take notes, and John was, my pen froze up. It was so cold. We couldn't even take notes here. But it is not this way all the way to the end, but it does go quite a distance here. And then you have some open area on this side. What we've pretty much, you got about a third of the bridge that looks like this, pretty packed in. The other two-thirds is fairly open. So it's not like you don't have some, a pretty good open area, but there's debris on, you know, at least 30 to 40% of the bridge that's really, really heavy. That's all there.
Well, Marlon, how does this compare to previous floods?
Well,
that's the question, right?
The Game and Parts tells us, but I think they're looking at the other end of the bridge. They said they think there's less debris out here than they saw in previous years when they cleaned it off. And, of course, they've had to clean it three or four times, and so it doesn't take necessarily a flood like this. You can get debris from just high water in the spring. But they say they don't think there's as much there. Of course, I pointed out, you might look at the other end of the bridge on our side, and they did do that in over the weekend. Yeah, you're right. There is quite a bit over there. But so we haven't been out there and seen the debris they've cleaned off in the past. They've just kind of done their job. That's what our agreement has been over the years. And so I don't know exactly myself, but they're saying they don't think it's necessarily that. That's why they're saying $900,000 for when we got it done for. I don't know. I hope there are contractors that are out there and hungry. Like Eric said, one of our, the other contractor that was here for the pre-bid meeting and didn't bid was Niewanner. He got the rock job on the Elkhorn, so he didn't have time. He had said he didn't, I asked him, and I really trust this guy. He said he wasn't so sure $900,000 was very far off. But if we look at spreading the contract out, maybe we can contractors that would not be quite so busy and spread the time out so they can do it when they can't. The thing we're missing then, of course, though, is getting this debris out of here before ice out. And taking a little bit of a risk in doing that. But I'm not sure. The other alternative is to pay the $1 million.
We'll see. We'll see what it brings. Any other questions from the directors? Roll call.
Fowler?
Yes.
Scott?
Yes.
Sapinski?
Yes.
Yes.
Chairperson?
Aye. That concludes the program project's first meeting. Thank you, Zephyr.
Rich, you're up. You want the gavel, Rich?
Oh, you want no, I'm gonna. The time is 7:55, and we'll call the FEL subcommittee to order. As previously stated, the open meeting act is posted on the back and outside. With that, quorum call.
Begley?
Here.
Bradley?
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
Conley?
Here.
And Chairperson?
Here. I have before me proof of publication of this meeting. Moving on to item 6, renewed recommendation of land acquisition for dam site 19 project. And I would make a motion that we go to executive session to discuss that topic.
Second. We now adopt the agenda.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
I'll second it.
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Hi.
Ed Jefferson.
Yes, and again, I apologize. Moving on, item six, and I move that we go into executive session to discuss land acquisition for dam site 19. Roll call?
Yes.
Second.
I'll second.
Thank you.
You bet.
I made the motion.
Rich.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Hi.
Begley?
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Ed Jefferson?
Yes.
We need a motion to go out in a
second. Okay, so we got a motion now to go out, come out of executive session, please.
I did.
He made the motion second.
And second is by
Fred.
Fred.
Thank you.
Roll call.
Conley?
Hi.
Hi.
Bradley?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
I'm not on the committee, so I can.
Would you care to read the motion?
I don't have a copy in front of me.
I'd like to move staff recommendation.
Okay. Everybody has it in front of them, paying $1,495,000 plus half of the taxes.
Payable in 3 annual installments.
Right.
Yeah. Any comments from the general public?
We need a second.
Second.
Any public comments? Staff, directors?
Seems like a lot of
roll call.
Hi.
Bradley?
Yes.
Yes.
Conley?
Hi.
And Jefferson?
Yes. And that concludes the agenda.
Jim Thompson, you're.
If you guys want to be bins,
it doesn't matter.
Call to order the executive subcommittee. Publication Open Meetings Act is on the back.
You're welcome now.
The previous been mentioned. Item 3, a quorum call.
Bradley.
Yes.
Conley.
Here.
Hi.
Caesar.
Yes.
Here. Top of the agenda. Is there a motion?
So moved. Second.
Roll call.
Conley.
Aye.
Caesar.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Yes, I have approved publication that this meeting. Item 6, review and recommendation approved change policy 4.0 board meetings, regular monthly meetings. Director Tim McCormick, you're up. What do you want to do?
Well, I just thought that we should conduct the business during business hours. It would probably be beneficial for the staff and consultants, certainly, and I don't know if we couldn't find a time that worked for us as directors to be here when we're not here till 9 or 9:30 at night for board meetings. Simple as that.
And committee meetings. And committee meetings.
Only the Thursday meeting for the board. The draft that you have in front of you says 2 o'clock, although we haven't had a motion yet. So
I'd like to make a motion.
Every second has been moved and seconded that the regular monthly meetings be held in 4 o'clock instead of 7 o'clock. Okay, any comments from the public? Directors. Caesar first.
The committee meetings, they moved up also?
They would reflect. I mean, they can. It's up to the board.
If not, I would make an amendment to do that.
The committee meetings aren't discussed in the policy, or so they're not covered in the policy, only the board meetings. So you could select whenever those are. You could be 4 o'clock, or you can make them the same.
Are you okay with that?
Since it's not in policy, we don't have to change that. But right. I think before we issue a subcommittee agenda, we should determine.
I would move that the committee meetings be moved to 4 p.m.
Which committee?
All committee meetings.
Right now, there's no
policy. Well, at the beginning, the starts.
You want to make it understood that.
Yes, yeah, I'm trying to, yeah. So there's no.
You start at 6:30 now, you want to move it up to 4?
Correct.
Okay. That's not really part of this particular.
I understand that, but I just.
Make that known.
Right, yeah.
Just saying.
All right. Director McCormick, 2 o'clock, you okay with 4 o'clock?
I would suggest we go earlier than 4 o'clock because that's the time you get the rush hour and get through. But if there's a trouble for directors to get here, I'll.
Director Sapinski.
I was going to suggest a compromise of 5, but I would take 4. How about that? I have to work. Most of us have to work.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Sorry, but, you know. Director, you had your hand up?
Yeah, working class stiff, 7 to 3:30. So I've talked to a couple of the other directors. 2 o'clock does not work for me. And I won't speak for the other directors, but I'm good with anything 4 o'clock and beyond, my personal schedule. In the conference we had in Kearney, there are a lot of times I take personal vacation, which is I'm glad to do. But the reality is I'm in a department that's small at OPPD, and there are a lot of latitude they give me, but the 2 o'clock, that just wouldn't work for me. So, or any time after that.
All right, I'd like to note that staff did provide in your binder here where the other NRDs are as far as our meeting times. It's all over as far as time. A couple of them do meet. We used to meet at 8 o'clock. We moved that up for reference purposes. So there's a, not that we have to do what every other NRD does, but that gives you a good reference.
Well, or because rush traffic out this way starts around 4 o'clock.
Beat it out here
if we're going to move it out.
Yep.
Move all, you had your hand up.
Thank you, sir. Let's not remember here. Let's not forget. Missing the people that kind of pay the bills, and they're working until 5:30, 6 o'clock. The right to come out here and listen and make their positions. And just because it's convenient, and yes, it would be more convenient to move it up, but essentially, these people need to be able to have access to it. And moving it up, I don't think serves them. I don't think it serves them at all. It's convenience for the board. People know it's at 7. They know when to come out here. I don't think there's really a good reason to change it just because it inconveniences the board to meet at 7 o'clock. So what? Your volunteers, it's once a month. You can get it out.
Follow your hand up.
Well, I was going to agree with my esteemed colleague, Director Sapinski. I have a bit of a time getting from Offutt out of here. I can 5 o'clock, maybe 4:30 at Durless, but I can't do 2 o'clock. Really enough at the base and getting out of there and over here is really difficult. So I guess we got a mismatch here. So.
Motion's
4.
Well, right now,
the motion's 4. One thing that I don't think has been discussed is the fact that we're a very large district. We go all the way up to South Sioux City. These folks come to a 7 o'clock meeting, a 6:30 meeting. They sit here for a couple hours and they have to drive home. I think we could have increased attendance by holding the meetings earlier.
Bradley.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, as looking at this motion and talking to a few other directors, I thought, you know, I could have gone either way, leave it at 7, but 2 o'clock might have been somewhat of a too early. 4 o'clock might have been a good compromise. If we go later than 4, that, you know, it's dinner hour, and so if we start at 4, we may, you know, an average of 2 hours be done by 6 and still be able to. Breakfast, I like all kinds of, you know, eat constantly. But that.
Are you talking about happy hour?
You got wings, half price.
You got half price wings.
Okay, that's what you're saying. But no, 4 o'clock is a good
I'm
time.
Sorry, that was
otherwise, leave it at 7.
I need to call the question. Are you giving any comment?
No, I was going to call roll call.
Oh, that's okay.
So is that okay if I call roll call?
It would be.
Okay. All
right.
Roll call. And, by the way, this would lay over 30 days.
Yeah.
It wouldn't start until January.
January.
Assuming it passes through session.
What is it? Can you repeat what it is just so I'm clear what the motion is? 4 o'clock? And it's just for the general public meeting on Thursday?
The board meeting.
Not Tuesday.
Well, we haven't covered that.
Not in this motion.
It's possible.
Correct.
Okay.
Due to policy, because policy changes, it takes 30 days for them to.
This wouldn't take effect till January.
Understood. Yeah. Thanks.
So it's 60 days from vote, right, Mr. Chairman? Implemented 60 days after the passage.
That would be January's board.
January's
board. It's 30 days.
The board doesn't vote on it until
Thursday.
Yeah, it's somebody. Yeah,
then it goes into effect when then?
January.
So it's 30 days after the vote. The proposals this board.
Under the policy, if you're going to change board certain policy,
next board meeting.
Board meeting that you would approve.
And then it's 30 days after that. That it takes effect.
Roll call.
Yes.
No,
Bradley.
Yes.
Conley.
Aye.
And
Jim. Yes. We are Jim.
Thank you.